You're going to be afraid. I don't like when people go, as an entrepreneur, you can be fearless, be fearless, be fearless. My thing is, you should always have new levels of fear at new levels of growth. When I spoke to 10 people, I had 10 person size fear. And then I spoke to 100 people. Guess what was waiting for me there? 100 person size fear. Then I spoke to 1,000. And then I spoke to 10,000. And each new level of entrepreneurship, there's a new level of fear. If you tell yourself, I've beaten fear forever, guess what you feel like when you find new levels of fear? You feel like a failure. You know, something's wrong. But if you tell yourself, yeah, fear is part of the price of admission,
yeah,
and I get to pay it with bravery, changes everything.
Bold visionaries, faithful disruptors. Some call them crazy, but they are called to create. Under His Power, for His Glory, the Faith-Driven Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Faith-Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. Today's a fun episode. We're here in Nashville, John Acuff's home, and just getting a chance to hear about some of the challenges that we walk through as entrepreneurs. And I think one of the challenges that we face most is the soundtrack that's playing in our mind. Oftentimes, we're getting pushback, maybe even negativity, if it's in our inbox, if it's in our Slack channels, if it's any direction, as we're building, pursuing, disrupting, and going after some of these big changes. It's easy to fill our mindset with all of the negativity and the things that might hold us back. And so today's episode, we get to push into the conversation to how do we flip it? And so today we get to think about this idea of what does it mean to think differently that leads us into acting differently as faith-driven entrepreneurs. So let's get started with today's episode. All right, if the shelves talked, what memory, what story up here talks the loudest?
Well, I mean, the one that's fun for me is I have a shelf of international editions of books, and I'm trying to get that completely full with one book per language. Like right now, there's some doubles, but like that's fun for me because like the soundtrack's cover from the Russian edition is brilliant. It's such a brilliant interpretation because they get to interpret it how they want. And I think it's fantastic. So I like that shelf because it reminds me you can write something in this space and send it out and you don't know what shores it's going to land on. Like, and often you don't find out that book exists until you see it on Instagram. Some reader in Turkey posts it and you're like, they tagged me.
Yeah.
I think that might be my name. And then you like go, hey, did the book get sold over in Turkey? And you're like, oh yeah, we'll try to get you one. And so that to me is a reminder of, you don't know whose story you're going to impact. I mean, you do know if you don't share it. If you don't launch things from your office, your home, whatever, it's not going to impact anybody. But you also don't know. And so when those bottles wash back up on my shore and go, oh, there's people in a country I've never been to with a language I don't speak that are being encouraged. That's probably the shelf that like I think about that one a lot.
I always find that so hard. Like, I mean, there's those moments of... Like, again, same as with videos and video stories that we capture. It's like, it's great. You see it. You're proud of it. You're encouraged to tell this person's story. But, man, you just never get that 360 user feedback on every user. Do you find that mysterious and like a wonder? Or do you find it like in this, like, man, that's the hard side of this?
I think it's I'm in the middle on that. Like, I don't – you have to love the process. So think about it this way. The feeling of opening a book you've written for any author is amazing. Like when you get that box and it's like real and you
smell,
hold it,
yeah.
All the things that lasts like a couple hours max.
Yeah.
But it takes me 1,000 hours to write the book. And so if I'm doing 10 hours a week, that's 100 weeks. You better find joy in the process, not just the final product. So a lot of times if I don't get that feedback, I feel like I've already been paid for the experience. It's awesome to get it, but I've already made peace with the idea of I can't expect that to be the payment. I have to find the process fun and engaging and worth it so that I get through it. Because if I put it all in the end, like that's where you go, oh man, that was disappointing or it didn't hit the way I wanted it to hit. And that's easier said than done, but... Like I turned to my 11th book recently, and so I feel like I've dialed that portion of the creation process in.
I'm staring at something up on the wall here that brings that to light. Talk us through, like, what are we looking at right there?
Oh yeah, so those are the hours on, that's probably my 9th book, the hour chart. So I really got serious about time. Everybody talks about time. like it's our most valuable resource, but I wasn't measuring it. I wasn't being smart with it. Mm. So now like I have this theory that anyone high performing is doing a lot of weird goals just for themselves. Mm. Like, and if you'll ask them questions and kind of be persistent, they'll be like, well, I do this game. They're all playing games. Everybody high performing I've ever talked to, I'll go, okay, but what are you doing? And like Craig Rochelle was on my podcast and he said, if I told you all of them, you'd think I was weird. And so then we had breakfast like 3 months later. And I was like, hey, I want to know the weird ones. But that's a weird one for me where I have a timer on my phone. And every time I finish an hour, I write it down. And I actually have been at the end of June, I will have tallied 3,000 hours on a project I'm working on. So So now I'm like, it's going to be a 10,000 hour project because the Malcolm Gladwell, Erickson definition of excellence. I'm like, can I do 10,000 hours on a thing? And so when people are like, and that's the only thing I can control a lot of days. Like one of the soundtracks I say is I'm the CEO of my actions, not the CEO of my outcomes. Mm. So I am the CEO of my actions, which means how do I measure hours? And most goals are squishy.
Yeah.
Like there's not finish lines. There's not. So hours for me is the great equalizer. Hours are, it's a democracy. Like it's, I put it in and they give me back the, you did a whole hour. Congratulations. Mm. There's a lot of other things that I don't control, but hours I do. So that's a chart of me going, how do I track these hours? And then the other thing is every time you do something new, that's challenging, fear says, this is the first time you've ever done it. Mm. This is the hardest thing you've ever done. You've never done something like this. And that's just not true. So that chart's also a reminder for me because the next book I write, fear will go, you've never written a book this hard. The last book was easy. The last book just came. You were so inspired. It took like 10 minutes and that's not true. So that to me is a picture of, hey, remember you've done hard things. You can do hard things and they take a long time. So that when I'm in hour 100 and I don't have the core idea yet, I don't go, this book's a failure. I go, oh yeah, I never get the core idea until like hour 400. Mm. Okay. So just keep plugging away.
Mm. So one of the books that you've written and you talk a lot about is this idea of starting. Mm-hmm. And I think when we think about faith-driven entrepreneurs, that's just such a big piece of us is getting over that fear as you're talking about starting. What was that start moment for you? Was it when you think, I mean, the first thing I remember was Stuff Christian's Life.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
What was it for you that got you into this point? Was it a Lego set? Was it writing? What was the start?
I mean, part of the start was frustration. I was at a job that didn't require the amount of creativity I wanted to express. Mm. And you can go with that in two ways. You can become bitter and jaded and have the Sunday scaries and blame and victimhood. Oh, my boss won't.
Yeah.
But there was nothing I was going to do that would turn that corporate setting into needing Christian satire. Mm. Like there was nothing I could say. There was not like, it would be absurd if I walked in there and was like, once again, they don't need that. It's a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Like, so I was frustrated. I think there's a lot, like we underestimate like a holy frustration. Mm. And so I felt like, man, I got a lot of ideas to share. I got a lot of things I'm interested in. I started my first podcast in 2001. I did a music review site and like I built it with Dreamweaver. It was impossible, dude. The images were all like, it was so hard to do a blog. But then it worked and I started getting like albums from record labels and then it was really hard. And so I quit and I didn't write again for like 7 years. So that was a long period of me not being engaged in that. And then I tried a bunch of things. And then I wrote that concept, Stuff Christians Like, and a bunch of people showed up and started to read it. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And then it built from there. The thing I tell people with starting is you never start with the character trait. No one ever wakes up and goes, today I think I'll have grit. Today I think I'll be disciplined. Today is the day I have persistence. That's not how life works. What happens is you bump into something that's better than what you currently have. Mm. And you go, oh, wait a second. Like this is... And so then that, so like the dream gives you the discipline. Like the dream always comes first, the discipline comes next. Mm. Because like my example, once I realized I liked blogging and communicating with people and maybe I'm an entrepreneur, I couldn't throw enough hours at it. Mm. So I thought of time, there we are at time again. Each hour was like a log and I wanted to throw it into the fire. And so it's not that I got disciplined and stopped watching so much TV. It's just that TV gave me nothing. Yeah. The blog was giving me everything. Yeah. So like, getting up early was I was able to write more. So I didn't become disciplined and then get up early. I was like, man, this blog is fun. Mm. And I can feel that it's fun and I feel called to it. So let me get up early. Like I would practice speeches on the drive to work on 400 in Atlanta. in the morning, I would give them to my steering wheel because it was the only time I had. I had two kids under the age of four. There was no other time. And all of that behavior started because I wanted something that I didn't currently have. So like the only reason you ever leave the comfort zone is something better is outside. Why would you ever leave the comfort? It's the name of it is comfort. Like you should never it's very comfortable, but you have this desire outside and you go, I'm willing to be very uncomfortable to go get that thing. And then you work your way toward that thing. But that thing, and it's, and you can't figure it out. I didn't see any of this when I first started blogging. Like you don't have to have a 12-year or 15-year plan. I think that's nonsense. But you do have to have something where you're like, I'm curious about that. I'm willing to throw some hours at it.
You know, I think about like some of the first times that we were filming with Lecrae and probably the first times that we were interviewing and capturing some of the content. He'd probably have identified himself at that time as a musician.
Sure.
But I think one of the things that's fascinating over the last couple of years, I think even in an exchange, we're exchanging emails, I saw at the bottom of it, it was entrepreneur. When did that switch from you when you went, I'm a writer to I'm an entrepreneur?
Well, I think it's levels. I think it's like anything else in life. There's levels to it. I first bumped into it. I worked at Home Depot and there was a guy there that was like said, hey, you should freelance some. And I didn't really know what that meant. And so I started to freelance right on the side and I realized, oh, there's all these other faucets. And if I'll work hard, I can turn on other faucets. And then I got, and we didn't have much money. So it was like, wow, if I work hard, it turns into this. And that's where I started to go, oh, okay. Like that's pretty fun, you know? And I kind of got the bug then. And then when I started my own company 12 years ago, like I didn't have an option. Like it was either you do it or you fail. And so it was like, okay, I better. And then now where I would say I am, like I've recently hired a president of the company and I'm now doing the transition from solopreneur to full business. And that's a huge transition too. So that feels like that's another rung on the ladder. And so, you know, cause even for me, I've had the same assistant for 10 years and she's phenomenal. But the first couple of years I felt awkward saying assistant. I would go, oh, my friend will help you with this. Like my friend. And now I'm like, no, who am I? Why do I feel like assistant is some, you know, big shot phrase? Like that's what she is and does. And she's amazing. And so I think there's always levels that as you go deeper into your entrepreneur journey, where you go, oh yeah, we need an office. We need a space. We need staff in the right way. And so I think you're always figuring that out and accepting new levels of it.
I want to come back to one of the things you said earlier, just about like, there's that curiosity of something out there that once you have that goal, it then kind of like creates the drive, the energy, there's some of that stuff. It's a fascinating thing, isn't it? Because like in some level, like we're praised as entrepreneurs of like that ambition, that drive, go get something that somebody else has.
Sure.
But some ways, like that can be an easy kind of like a gateway mindset to like this endless greed, this endless desire of what something else wants. How do we walk that tension of this idea of like, as entrepreneurs, we're praised, man. Oh, you disrupted, you did this. But really, like, was it for the right reason? Like, what was the motivation that said, man, you want to go get that thing out there?
Yeah, I mean, we could do like 9 hours on that question for me, because I'm really fired up right now about, like, especially men. Like, that's what I can speak to directly. Like, men my age right now, I would say, are labeling burnout when it's actually boredom. They're not burned out. They haven't given their all. They haven't used every gift. They haven't expended all their energy. They're bored. They're under-challenged, underutilized, and overstimulated. You know, and so like when I meet guys that go, if you say you have 10 gears and you're, you know, what gear are you at? And they'd go, I'm at gear 8. I'm like, you're at gear 3. Yeah. Like we, in our culture right now, especially entrepreneurs, are becoming what I would call success voyeurs. Where I meet people all the time that go, here's the 10 podcasts I watch and listen to.
Yeah.
And they're CEOs interviewing other CEOs and they're like high performance athletes talking to other high performance athletes. And then I'll go, well, how did you change your life with that content? And they did nothing.
Yeah.
But they can list 10 entrepreneurs that they love. So they're success voyeurs. They're watching other people be successful. So my thing with like, how do you not avoid that becoming an issue? I would love it for you to get anywhere close to being an issue. When somebody, when a Christian man especially goes, I just don't want my career to become an idol. I'm always like, don't worry, you're safe. Like you're a long way from that being a problem. Like you're not doing anything. Yeah. Like you're not, and where I'm much more of a, I see more people that need to be double the talent people that aren't.
Yeah.
So they would go, well, I don't want to burn out. And I'm like, you've got so much more to give. So for me, I find more people that I have to throw more fuel on their desire, not less.
Right.
I rarely meet somebody where I go, oh man, they're burning out and they've given it their all. If anything, they have so much more to give. So I haven't.
Do you think that that's like in that 40, I mean, when that 40 age, I like that you're focusing in on that. Have we just played it safe? Have we been like middle of the road on some of the things and like we've lost the risk appetite?
I think there's a lot of that. I would say in the 20s, like I don't want to ever hear a 26-year-old use the phrase work-life balance. Hmm. You're not supposed to have that in your 20s. Those are the building years. But men in their mid-40s who have underplayed their life preach work-life balance to 26-year-olds. And I go, what are you even talking about? Mm. If you're like, I'm mentoring a 25-year-old right now, and I'm like, do both. Like most people I give do both advice. So they go, well, John, I just don't know if I should do this full-time job or get a side hustle. I'm like, yeah, do both. You're capable of both. Or like, I don't know if I should get in shape or worry about my finances. I'm like, yeah, do both. So I just feel so many people have more to give. As far as like people in their 40s, I don't know if it's playing it safe. I just don't know that they've ever tried fully. Like, I don't think they have relationships that call them beyond themselves. Mm. So an example of that in my own life, I hired this president, Bill Hampton. We've been friends for 15 years. And I did an event recently and he's coming with me to events. That's never happened. So for 12 years, it's just me. I pop into Range Rover, or Microsoft, whoever. I give a speech, I bounce out. But now he's in the back of the room. He's taking notes and reviewing stuff we're doing. So this was probably a month ago. We're in Orlando. I speak at a tech company. Goes great. I get a standing ovation, which doesn't happen a lot. I don't end my speeches like with a moment where it's like, and the real treasure was the friend you made along the way. Thank you. Like, so I get a standing ovation. We go to the airport. And this is like an hour later. He's like, hey, I got five things I think you can do better on that speech. Hmm. And their ego part of me is like, what do you mean? Like, dude, I just got a standing ovation.
Yeah.
But the reality is to get to the level you're capable of, you do your best. And then somebody goes, I think you might be able to do it even better. And then you do it even better. Yeah. And so I just don't think, I think men don't have community. I think they're afraid. I think they, again, overstimulated. So like they've got the phone, they've got a mall or a casino in their pocket. So they're like, there's all this energy going other places. And I just don't think they have leaned into what they're really capable of. So anytime I get a question like, well, how do you avoid not going too far, doing it for the wrong reasons, which is possible. Like, my version of that is I know when speaking changed for me, when it changed from being an act of performance to an act of service, meaning I'm not there to convince them John Acuff is amazing. I'm there to serve them. Like, and that switch changed everything because now I go, how do I make the CEO look like a rock star? How do I make that person on the third row get something they can use with their family a week from now? And that changed how, like, and you can tell the difference. You can tell when a pastor is going, hey, and then like God added another element to that where he's like, you feed my people, I'll feed you. So now I look at being an entrepreneur as you feed my people, I'll feed you. Meaning I don't go to my audience have them tell me that's you're good. Amazing.
Yeah.
You're so smart. You're so great. Cause if I do that, I'm feeding off of them and I'm doomed. But if I start the day full, I already know who I am. I already know what I'm about. I already know my identity. I already know my worth. Yeah. I already know what I'm capable of. I just get to give and give and give. And it's a fire hose going in the right direction.
Entrepreneurship can be a lonely journey. The weight of leadership, heavy. You've been called to create impact through your business. But here's the truth. Isolation kills vision. Comfort destroys calling. That's why Faith-Driven Entrepreneur created our foundation groups. Join 10 fellow entrepreneurs who truly understand your path just for 1 hour a week for 8 weeks. Online or in person. Together, you'll explore God's purpose for your business through practical, purposeful discussions with others who really get it. Don't journey alone. Your calling is too important. Visit faithdrivenentrepreneur.org and join a group today. That's faithdrivenentrepreneur.org.
Push into that idea of like the soundtrack mindset, because I think so oftentimes we wake up in the morning and we just think like, hey, the music will just naturally fill the void.
Yeah, if only.
Yeah.
Yeah, if only. So yeah, soundtracks, the concept's really simple. we tend to complicate things that are simple. Like we make them fuzzy, holistic, and mindset is certainly one. Here's how mindset works. Great thoughts turn into great actions. Great actions turn into great results. That's the whole, like, if you only learn that about mindset, you've learned what mindset is. But the problem is we often overfocus on the results we want and underfocus on the thoughts, and then we never get the actions. And so mindset for me is, how do I figure out what I want to do? Here's what I want to accomplish. What are the thoughts that are going to get me to do that? And then how do I turn those thoughts into actions? Like, the difference between mindset and meditation is meditation stays on the thought side. Mindset does all three. And so it's not, I haven't done a good job teaching a company mindset if they go, man, we feel a lot better. We're still going to fail, but we feel like our heads feel good. So the challenge is, if you wake up in the morning and go, I hope my thoughts are helpful today. They're not going to be. Yeah. Like, your brain has something called negativity bias. It remembers negative things better than the positive things, just as a protection mechanism. So even to kind of get past that part of your brain. Science,
data, research kind of
things crazy.
That you have that handles that jump out to you.
Well, I mean, like, for me, you don't even need, like, there's so many scientific studies about how it's easier to remember bad things than good things because your brain is like, snake dangerous. Like, okay, you know, let me file that away. If I ever see this type of shape, it indicates a snake. I need to treat it as dangerous, you know? But for me, an example of that, everybody's had that moment in life where you're in the grocery store and your brain goes, remember that dumb thing you said 2 months ago in that meeting? Remember that stupid thing you did 3 years ago at that job? Like, you weren't thinking about anything about that, and your brain brings that up. It never does the reverse. Your brain never goes, I just want to remind you, you're pretty good. Like, you did a great job a year ago. Do you remember that? Oh man, you crushed it. That was great. That, like, no one watching this right now will go, no, that's what my brain does. And so for me, there's so many studies. Probably one of my favorite studies was in Research Quarterly, a sports psychology journal. And they brought in two groups of college students and said, we want you to, you know, get better at free throws. So one group, they said, for 20 days, shoot free throws, practice free throws, basketball, here's some gym time. Second group, they said, we want you to think about shooting free throws. Just think about it. Don't touch a basketball. Don't go to the gym. 20 days in a row, the group that used the basketballs improved by 24%. The group that just thought about using basketballs improved by 23%. There was a 1% difference. That's how gullible and flexible your brain is. So if you know that, like, once you know that, you go, this thing's programmable. Like, what if I, and then you add the God layer and it's like, renew your mind, take every thought captive, think of what's true and beautiful and noble. I didn't create any of that. Like, I just am responding to something God's been trying to get us to do forever.
So sixth grade basketball coaching tips you just gave me for my girls' basketball team. That's great. So we're just going to
see their thoughts. Well, like, in a sixth grade, like, oh my gosh, their thoughts. Good luck.
So take us into this mindset of, where do you think entrepreneurs are most mornings? Because I mean, it's a lonely journey. I mean, you're always constantly selling something to somebody. You've got skeptics inside your home. You've got skeptics outside the walls. You've got skeptics on Slack. You've got skeptics in your email box. You've got skeptics on your website. You've got skeptics everywhere. Like, take us into the importance, and what do you think it is for entrepreneurs that we get the soundtrack in the right direction?
So I think part of it is, you know, getting a few that you can repeat to yourself. The process of soundtracks is really simple. You retire broken ones. You replace them with new ones, and then you repeat those new ones so often they become as automatic as the old ones. So the easiest way to retire a broken soundtrack is to identify them. And the fastest way to do that takes like 30 seconds. It's not a long process, is you write down a goal. Write down a goal, and you can relate it to being an entrepreneur. I want to scale my company. I want to hire somebody. I want to go stand on stages. I want to write down any goal, and then listen to your first thoughts about that goal. Listen to your reaction, because every reaction is an education. So is your reaction positive? You should do this. Customers are going to love this. So many people are going to want to buy it. Like, or are they negative? Who are you to think you can do that? You don't have the expertise. Somebody smarter has already done that. In most cases, they're going to be negative. And so you identify them and you go, okay, well, what would I like to think instead? Great entrepreneurs are always picking their thoughts out ahead of time. Thoughts come by one of two ways, choice or chance. And a lot of people chance them, meaning, like you said, I woke up this morning, I hope they're good, versus choosing them. So for me, like, The best entrepreneurs I meet rarely pick their thoughts out ahead of time, meaning they go, I've got a big meeting on Thursday. I had one go really bad a month ago. I don't want to bring that one into this one.
Yeah.
So when I walk into that room, here's what I'm going to be saying.
From the very beginning.
Yeah. But if you pick the thoughts out ahead of time and go, when I walk in that room, these are the three things I'm going to have on repeat. Awesome. So like one for me, this is hyper practical. A soundtrack I think about all the time as an entrepreneur is the client who pays you the least will demand the most. The client who pays you the least will demand the most. And I think about that every time I'm in a negotiation. And somebody explained it to me this way. They said the problem in that moment is they've stretched to afford you. The client is stretched to afford you. And they're like, this better be amazing. And you've done the reverse. You've lowered to their level. So you're thinking this better be fast. This better be easy. There better not be a lot of rounds.
Yeah.
And you have a disastrous relationship right from the get-go. And so another one I think about, because entrepreneurs think about money a lot, is if it's a problem in the ask, it'll be a problem in the task. Meaning if in the negotiation, if that part's terrible, we're not going to have a good rest of the relationship. If the ask, when we're both on our best behavior, is bad, the task is going to be bad too. So that helps me practically like filter out, okay, this is a good opportunity, this isn't a good opportunity, or like I need to expect this with this client. So over the years, as you're an entrepreneur, if you pay attention, you just start to pick those up and you start to go, oh, I need this one. And so like another one of mine is ask for more. Like I have that written on a note, ask for more, because I found myself undervaluing my work. And I was like, you know, be deliberate, ask for more. Like, what does it look like to be brave and ask for more? And so I think that's what's really fun, is that if you as an entrepreneur go, here's what's coming up, I need some really strong thoughts to help me with that. And then you just create them, or then you just start to collect them. And then you've got this operating system that does lead to action, that does lead to results. And it kind of becomes a success loop.
It's a muscle memory. We have to train this. This isn't going to happen by accident. And I love just being in your house here, and specifically even seeing that ask for more up there. Is like, here you are writing this stuff, but you're putting it right there in front of yourself there.
I have to. Like I knew soundtracks would work because it worked for me. Like it was, there's ideas you read sometimes, especially entrepreneur ideas, where you're like, that person's never been an entrepreneur. Like they've never led a team. Like you can tell a fake leadership book in about 10 minutes because the idea sounds good until it interacts with people. Like you go, this person, this leadership expert has never managed humans. And unfortunately, they're everywhere. And so for me, I knew soundtracks would work because I use it. I've been using it for years. It's a concept that helps me in everything I do. And so, and then like to have it tested with real people and have them go, oh, hey, here's my version of that, because anyone can create them. Ask for more isn't creative. Like it's not hooky. Like some of mine, because I'm a writer, I, you know, in corporate America, I was a copywriter. So I wrote headlines. So sometimes my soundtracks can be hooky, but they don't have to be. For like the average person can write, ask for more. Nobody would go, it's so creative. I really, that was, no wonder you're so brilliant. You said ask for more. Like those are such boring words, but in the right combination, for me, they matter.
It's about simplicity on the other side of complexity, where you're bombarded by information. And I think finding those simple frameworks and those simple things that you go back to repetitively is such a gap in the conversations.
Also have to do it repetitively to change the behavior. So what happened with soundtracks, it was interesting. When it came out, 48 hours later, people would be like, hey, I retired my broken soundtracks, I replaced with new ones, and it didn't work. And I would say, well, the books existed for 2 days. So I know you haven't repeated it. And here's what, like, so then a soundtrack for me became, don't give the problem a year and the solution a week. So people do this with diets. They go, John, this exercise isn't working. And I'll go, well, how long have you been doing it? And they go, like 6 weeks. And I go, how long did it take you to gain the weight? And they'll be like, 6 years. So you gave the problem 6 years to develop and the solution 6 weeks. That's so unkind to yourself. So I just think we have to give ourselves, especially as entrepreneurs, time to get better. I had a friend of mine on a walk, a guy named Nate. I was telling him, man, I'm just a bad leader. Like I'm a bad leader because I was having some trouble. And he was like, I think you need to change that soundtrack too. I'm a new leader. I'm a new leader. And he was right. Like, I'm new at this. I'm new at so many. And being an entrepreneur is constantly being new at things. And the problem part of it is you can see the expert version of it everywhere. And then you compare yourself to people. Like, I always joke about, like, when people early in the day would compare themselves to Gary Vee, they'd go, Gary Vee's killing it. He's killing it. I go, you know, he has 800 employees. Like, so let's imagine he has an 8-story building with 100 people on each floor. Mm. Would you ever drive down the highway, see an 8-story building and go, that building's doing so much better than I am? All those, no, that would be ridiculous. But you see the face of the thing and you go, man, he's producing so much more content. Alex Hormozi is producing so much more content. You're like, yeah, you shouldn't. I never compare myself to Office Parks. Mm. I never drive down the road and go, that Office Park is crushing me. But we see the individual and we go, man, I'm doing a bad job. Yeah. Mr. Beast is doing so much better than me, or whatever the comparison is. And that's the danger of the internet.
It's such a danger. It's a danger, like, in one, and it's great to have examples and stories out there. But we face this challenge of faith-driven entrepreneurs. We capture these incredible stories. Mm-hmm. But yet it's the story that, again, it's 10, 15 years down the road and you're trying to say, hey, how do you bring the, not the 50-year-old version of that story, but the 35-year-old version to say, hey, where were you in that mess? And and I think in, it's not just in Christendom, in the church, but like we're so much in that comparison game, and like just disentangling from that is just a huge, huge step that we have to take. So I was looking around the shelves here and beyond the great cars, the Waldo, and everything that's here, one of the things that stood out to me were these cards. And I think that I love these things so much because with the 16, a 13, 11-year-old at home is that we can fight for some of these ideas, but it really pushes into some of the like practical, like, hey, what does it look like to start these conversations? So how did these come about? What have you seen so far as you guys have started doing these?
Yeah, it's funny. So you're talking about the soundtracks cards. We made a 52-card deck to start conversations on multiple levels. One with yourself, like an internal conversation, where, you know, some of those are the best conversations where it's just you. You mentioned being an entrepreneur. It's lonely. Nobody's there. You're doing things. I always joke with entrepreneurs that family, friends will say the S word to you and they go, the S word, still? Like, are you still trying to do that? You still doing? And still is such an insulting word, because what it says is smarter people would have already gone back to a different job. Smarter people would have already quit. And so it's a lonely thing. So we designed them to have an internal conversation, but also a conversation with your family. But where they came from, part of it is you're surrounded by the ones I have in my office. Like, I need to be reminded sometimes hundreds of times a day. And so when I hired this president, Bill Hampton, we had a live event coming up and he was like, I really want to use some cards for my family at the dinner table. I think we need to do it. And to be honest with you, I was like, I don't know if we can pull it off. Like, as an entrepreneur, I was like, I don't know. And he was like, I need you to trust me on this. We're going to do it. And then he spearheaded that. I helped, you know, write them as the writer, and worked with another writer to kind of figure out some good questions. But they came from, well, let's see if this is something that'll help people. Yeah. And then it became this big thing where people said, oh my gosh, like, I can carry one in my pocket. Like, this is the one I need to remember. Or I can, you know, put one up on a whiteboard and this is the one. Or we can start a team meeting with this. So leaders can go, hey, we're starting a team meeting. We're going to start from this place just to make sure we're all on the same page. Or as a family, because the family angle, I think as a dad, it's hard to go from not talking about anything to having this heart to heart. And as a dad, you want that to happen. And I've blown that so many times. Like, I blew it most with my oldest daughter. This was like 5 or 6 years ago. We were at church and one of her classmates got baptized. And I felt this big shame about, like, she hasn't been baptized. And that had nothing to do with her faith. That was 100% about, like, me as a dad, my ego, like, a good dad would have already, like, gotten, closed the deal. Like, it was so bad. Like, it was very embarrassing. So we get to the car, like, 10 minutes later, after church ends, and I go, hey, Ellie, we haven't even left the parking lot. And I go, would you say you have a lifelong relationship with Jesus Christ? And she was so insulted because I skipped 15 levels of intimacy. And it had nothing to do with her. It was all about my ego. And she said, because she's a full, confident young woman, she said, Dad, what do you think I've been doing at the small group I've attended for the last 6 years? Ouch. Like, why would you ask me that? She was very insulted. And so, like, I apologized, and but that for me is an example. As a parent, you're trying to find ways to have these conversations, and you hope that somebody will go, like, hey, here's a lifeline. Like, this is a good. And so for us as parents, we're deliberate about that. And what was fun is about a month ago, I got to baptize her at church, and she brought it up, and it was a surprise, and it was a full circle moment of, I didn't put that pressure, and I had apologized for it. And this was a Sunday. On Friday, we had done an event together, because clients are sometimes asking, because we've written some teen books, will your daughters come? And at that event, I told that story again and was like, hey, I'm so sorry I did that. And then 2 days later, she was like, hey, I'd like to be baptized. Mm. But that's what the cards do. I think for parents, they give them an easy on-ramp.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is they give you a third party. It's hard if you go, hey, I wrote a question in my diary. I'd like to, like, every kid's gonna be like, oh my gosh. If you go, hey, I got this card pack. Yeah. We saw this guy speak. He came to our company. It was really fascinating. I'm curious what you think about this. What do you think about this?
Yeah.
And then the kid can be like, that's a dumb question. Doesn't matter. It's not
there's
saying
an
dad. It's
the unfiltered nature that comes to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And now there's a third party in a good way. Mm. And so that's what I'm seeing is people use them that way.
I love the practical nature of it. I love it as a dad. We've done some of this with our teen series for entrepreneurs. It's just like, as you said, like you can think differently. You can maybe think about what you'd hope to do differently, to act differently, but there's a conversation in that in between. Mm-hmm. So I can't help but ask a couple of these questions.
Sure, yeah, let's go.
So looking at these cards, the practical nature of these, one of the ones as I was shuffling through it that stood out, it says, bravery wouldn't even exist unless fear did first. What's a situation you're avoiding that might be an invitation to bravery in disguise? What are we getting at the heart of that question? What's at the heart of the issue that we're struggling with?
Well, I just want people to recognize that fear is an invitation to bravery. Like fear isn't the foe of bravery. Fear is the factory of bravery.
Mm.
Meaning, oh, I'm afraid. Oh, now I can go be brave. Like I want to tie them together, because what happens is people go, I feel fear. I must have failed. Something's wrong. Like I had a counselor once say, the feelings that get you are the feelings you have about feelings, because you have a feeling about a feeling. So like a lot of families grew up, anger was bad. Anger was bad. You should never be angry, especially you add faith to that. Yeah. And so what happens is people feel angry, so then they feel guilty. And that guilt makes them feel angrier, and then they feel guilty, and it becomes this huge thing. So with that particular one, I'm trying to get us to see that when I'm afraid, where's the bravery in this moment? Like where's the, and the thing is like, you wouldn't need bravery if you were already the most confident person.
Yeah.
You wouldn't, like, we needed extra bravery during COVID because we didn't have clarity. We didn't have consistency. We didn't know what was going to happen. That's the moment where bravery actually shines. Yeah. If you knew everything already, you wouldn't need bravery.
Yeah.
If you were already, like, one of the things I say is, like, resilience is just giving yourself permission to start again. You wouldn't need resilience if every time worked. It only is necessary in failure. So when you fail, don't go, I'm a failure, this is wrong. Go, oh, I just got invited to resilience. I just got invited to try again. And so how do I? So that's what the purpose of that card was to be, is like, you're going to have these moments.
Yeah.
Like, and the other thing is, you're going to be afraid. Like, I don't like when people go, as an entrepreneur, you can be fearless, be fearless, be fearless. My thing is, you should always have new levels of fear at new levels of growth. The only time I'm really not afraid is when I'm hiding in my comfort zone. It's one of the nice things about the comfort zone. But if you take speaking as a metaphor, when I spoke to 10 people, I had 10 person size fear. But I worked on it. I got over it. And then I spoke to 100 people. And guess what was waiting for me there? 100 person size fear. Then I spoke to 1,000. And then I spoke to 10,000. And each new level of entrepreneurship, there's a new level of fear. If you tell yourself, I've beaten fear forever, guess what you feel like when you find new levels of fear? You feel like a failure and you go, something's wrong. But if you tell yourself, yeah, fear is part of the price of admission.
Yeah.
And I get to pay it with bravery, changes everything.
Faith-driven entrepreneur for teens. You want your teen to pursue success and live with significance. But in a world fueled by greed and self-promotion, they need a better story than what social media sells. Here's the good news. There's a growing movement of faith-driven entrepreneurs using business to solve real problems, serve others, and point to God in every decision. In Faith-Driven Entrepreneur for Teens, Kobe Cotton, Lecrae, and David Platt take students on a global journey, spotlighting real builders in media, tech, real estate, music, and more. In partnership with Pat Lencioni's Working Genius, students discover their God-given strengths, expand their imagination, and spark conversations about life beyond high school. Help your teen dream bigger and build a life of purpose. Learn more about Faith-Driven Entrepreneur for Teens. Visit faithdrivenentrepreneurforteens.org.
Isn't there something that I feel like in church and Christendom and the faith, and maybe there's a stuff Christians like kind of post here, but like we've misplaced fear in the equation. And we've missed the fact that, yeah, fear is designed there to create that dependency on God, that conversation with God. It's a way that, like, I mean, we think pushing us back to God. Like,
100%. Here's how I think about that. Like, if I run in the morning, say I run 3 or 4 miles in the morning, I don't have to work hard to drink water all day. I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
If I don't run in the morning, it's a chore. I got to go. I got to get X amount of ounces. If I'm living over my skis, if I'm as an entrepreneur trying things I've never tried and trying to grow things in ways I've never grown, I don't have to work hard to rely on God. Because I'm like, dude, if you, like, in the cave, David didn't have to be like, man, I guess I'll do my quiet time. Like, you're in the cave. Yeah. This is a challenge. It's only when you're kind of in moments of safety and comfort and you're underperforming and underplaying. And so, yeah, for me, I think about it that way. Like, I know it's a good thing when I feel like, oh man, I don't know how to do this. We got a lot of moving pieces on here. Like, God, you better show up in a big way. Yeah. And the fear is definitely tied to that.
I think there's so much about this. When I think about, like, teaching entrepreneurship to my kids, it's just like fear is a part of the equation. It's part of the joy of following after Jesus.
Oh yeah.
It's like this, not only the dependency, but it's the high highs, the low lows, the range of the emotions. And I think there's something that we have to really kind of understand the equation of it. I want to jump to one of the ones. It's a cousin to this. It says, what's a failure that you experienced that made for a good story or taught you something on the other side?
Yeah. So the soundtrack connected to that one is it'll be a success or a story. Mm. And that's how I try to look at when I do something brave, being an entrepreneur. I'm like, it's going to work. Like, and it's going to be a success, or it's going to be a story that I get to encourage myself with and other people. Mm. Like, one of the things I tell people is, like, the scars you share become lighthouses for other people who are headed to the same rocks.
Amen.
And so for me, like, if I blow something, like, once I've processed it, like, there's a great line. I don't know who said it. You should write from your scars, not from your wounds. And I think in Christendom, especially, like, when somebody goes through a divorce and then an hour later has a book about it, it's like, you haven't healed from that, dude.
Yeah.
Like, that is a wound, and you gotta, like, let that scar over first. So for me, when I have a failure, I'm like, okay, how could this help other people? And the time I've been brave enough to do that, especially my entrepreneurship journey, where I go, yeah, we blew that. Like, we recently made a mistake that we're in the process of rectifying right now. And we just said, like, hey, like, we made this mistake and we're going to change it. And some people might go, well, you should, like, a leader never shares mistakes. I just don't think that's true. And I think when you can tell somebody is hiding their mistakes, it breaks down the relationship. Mm. Like, I don't like leaders, entrepreneurs, pastors, whoever, who, when I hear them speak, have been on a 30-year win streak. Like, the only mistakes they talk about happened, like, 40 years ago that they don't care about anymore. I like when somebody goes, yeah, man, here's this thing I tried. And the lie of it, I think the lie of it is, like, when a friend tells me one of his weaknesses or a mistake he made, I go, he's so brave. I respect him more.
Yeah.
When I go to do it, the enemy goes, if you share this, people won't think you're strong. They'll think you're weak. And so I think we have to get comfortable with, like, no, I'm going to try this thing. It's going to be a success, or it's going to be a story that we end up getting to share about and think about. I mean, you know, I could be, like, frustrated that my president of the company said, hey, you need to change these things in your speech, like, because he was right. Or I can go, oh, you're right. Like, I can see that. Like, how do I share that for other people? The Ellie story. I told you that I messed up with Ellie.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real thing that I was really ashamed of, really embarrassed by. That happened. And
it
now,
happened,
like,
but I saw you sharing about it even recently. I think you had posted about something. And just the conversation that starts around that, like, I mean, it's so much, I mean, deeper, more meaningful, maybe than a bunch of other conversations we're going to have. I mean, those are the things that people are having the hunger and craving for in this moment.
Well, and they think everybody else has, that's the other lie we believe, is that everybody else has it figured out. Like, if you do entrepreneurship long enough, you realize, no, everybody else is making it up too. There's not this handbook on how to be a perfect entrepreneur that everybody got in the maternity ward except you.
Hmm.
And you get around successful people, and it's disappointing at first, because, like, you'll get into a room and go, okay, now I'm in the room where it's all people that have all the secrets. And then they'll ask you for advice, and you're like, oh no, we're both trying to figure this. Like, you don't know what YouTube's doing either. But eventually you get to the spot where it's honest and you go, yeah, I tried this thing and, like, man, it blew up in my face. Mm. And once you can do that, like, and it's fun. Like, I think an isolation of failure is massive like a failure in community becomes a joke eventually. It becomes like inside a safe community where you go, hey, we did a launch once. This is a couple years ago. And I asked the guy, it was for an online thing. And I was like, I asked my sales guy, I was like, how many do we sell? And he was like, a guy named Brian bought it. And I was like, no, what are the numbers? And he was like, yeah, a guy named Brian. I was like, you never want your sales to be able to be names.
No.
You know, you want 42 units or 1,000. I was like, and I'll tell that story to other entrepreneurs in the moment. Yeah. Like I'm not going to pretend it didn't hurt or was frustrating or I felt embarrassed, whatever. But eventually it's a story that I can then go, like one of my favorite parts of one of my speeches is I end by saying that, you know, I did a 4-hour version of this for FedEx. I'll go like, this is only 30 minutes. I did a 4-hour version of this at the FedEx corporate headquarters. And I build up the tension and I go, and they ordered a copy of one of my books for everybody. And like the tension, and I go, and the publisher sent them directly to the FedEx corporate headquarters. And I keep repeating that phrase because I want them to see the punchline. And the punchline is, and they sent me the tracking link for the order to the FedEx corporate headquarters. And I clicked on it and it was a UPS tracking link. And the room groans. And I go, I UPS books to the FedEx corporate headquarters. A dude in a brown truck had to pull up to the FedEx security gate and say, I got some John Acuff books in here. He's a business expert, clearly. Like, where should I put them? I'm not familiar with the campus. And in the moment when it happened, it was a problem. Like, we like, I apologized. Like, it was an issue. They booked me to speak again. And this time I had the publisher mail them to me. We repackaged them in FedEx, sent them on. Like,
story.
It was a problem we fixed. Yeah. It was frustrating. But over time, it's become this, everybody in that audience has had that moment where they replied all to an email they shouldn't have replied all to, or they messed up something. And that to me is more connecting as an audience than 30 minutes of me talking about home runs.
Yeah. The life stories. I mean, that we love them when grandpa told them, we love them when we get to tell them.
Yeah.
And it's that season. I want you to take us into like the season of life that you're in right now. Mm-hmm. I've loved seeing the conversation that you've had about this is like the kids are at college. Yeah. It's a new season for you and your wife. Just thinking about like traveling together, being on trips together, doing ministry and work together.
Yeah.
Take us through like, what are some of the things you're learning in this season?
Well, you have to, it's a new rhythm. Like you have to develop it as a new rhythm, just like any other season in your life. And so I think the first thing is we celebrated it as a launch, not as a sadness. That's a big thing my wife always talks about is celebrate the launch, don't mourn it. Like if you bawl when your kid gets on the bus at kindergarten, like one of the hardest things for a kid is watching his mom cry. Like just in general, in life, it's very traumatic to see a parent cry. Yeah. So instead of going, I can't believe they're going to kindergarten. This is terrible. Celebrate the launch. That was the whole goal. Mm. It's sad if they don't get to go to kindergarten. Mm. It's amazing if they do. And so with college, we didn't go, oh my gosh, this is, they're both leaving. We're empty. Mm-hmm. Like, why would we? That was the whole plan. For 18 years, we worked toward that thing. Mm. So we celebrated the launch, I think is how we started it. And then we're learning new rhythms and it takes a little while. Like there was one weekend where we did all our chores too fast. Like on Saturday morning, we went to like Costco and Trader Joe's and like got gas and picked up dry, like too fast. And then like by 9:45 a.m., we were like, okay, we did it all. So like, what do you want to do the next 16 hours? Like just stare at each other.
Yeah.
And then like on Monday, I ran this is Labor Day. I ran a 10K. And so I was home, showered, had already run a 10K by like 8:45. And I was like, don't you have some returns to make at Walmart and Ross? And she was like, yeah. I was like, let's do those. So we're in the line at Walmart. And my wife looks at me and she goes, hey, just so we're clear, you have to spend time with me on Wednesday because you're using my tasks because you're restless. She said, I see what you're doing. There's no part of you that wants to stand in a Walmart return line, but you feel restless at home. So you're trying to jump into my stuff. So I guess on Wednesday, we'll do it as a weekend day. And I was like, I was like, you're right. I apologize. Like, let's go. And so finding things to do where it's like, okay, do we hike?
Yeah.
Do we volunteer? Like, what are the things to fill that time so that you have, it's a new rhythm.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the thing. And then the other thing we're learning is nobody talks about how challenging it is to raise adult children. Hmm. Like I have this theory that for every 100 books on raising a 4-year-old, there's only one on raising adult children.
Yeah.
The market is just less, I guess, but.
So do we have to guess what the next book is?
No, I don't know. I don't know. The challenge for me, I asked this guy, David Ashcraft, who I really like.
Yeah.
I was like, why is that? Why do I feel that way? And he said, well, the stakes are higher. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, If your kid gets cut from a volleyball team in eighth grade, that's very disappointing. Yeah. If they get a divorce, it's a little different. And I was like, oh my gosh, the stakes are higher.
Yeah.
And you have less control as a parent. Like, parenting is a process of this. Like, as they get older, it's just this. Because when they're young, you can kind of be like, you can force them to have friends in a way. You can arrange like some play dates where like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Braxton's at the park the same time we are. And you slam them together and like, you're best friends now. Yeah. And then like the friend that sucks, you're like, don't answer that mom's calls. But like when they're in high school and college and their 20s, your hand just has to open because you don't control that. So that's what's been really fun is that process. And from a God perspective, God's been very clear on like, you trust me with my life or with your life. Do you trust me with theirs? You trust me with your life. Do you trust me with theirs? And like, or who cares more that they have friends like you or me? I'm like, well, you ultimately do. Like you, like I do. Like, because that's what every parent's afraid of. They don't have any friends. I don't know where these kids are that have amazing lifelong friendships, but every parent I talk to is like, man, my kid doesn't have close friends right now.
Yeah.
And I think we're afraid of that. And that's where the trust comes in.
What's it like traveling together, speaking engagements? I mean, it's fun to hear the family stuff.
Yeah.
What's it like to be on the road together in that?
Well, I mean, a funny thing is like Jenny immediately is like, we're not eating terrible airport food. Like my rule is like, cause you know, travel never works food wise and time wise. Oh, yeah. You're always somewhere where you have to force yourself to eat early. You're like, your plane's going to fly over lunch. You're like, it's 10:15. I could eat a double cheeseburger at the airport. I guess that's what I'm going to have to do. And so she's like, yeah, we're not doing that. So she brings what I would call like a flying charcuterie board. So like now meals for me, they have these like steak cubes from Costco and then blueberries and like tomatoes and almonds and like one piece of chocolate. Like it's very elaborate and so many different dishes. And I'm like, this is so weird because I feel full and not sick. Like I don't feel.
I'm just picturing the same TSA gate agent in Nashville airport, like looking at you. Is this the same John that I knew a couple
years
ago?
It's wild because I, in my head, I'm like, oh, let's go to this terrible place where I'll eat like 9,000 calories of airport shame. And she's like, or we could eat blueberries and not feel bad about our life choices. And so like, or she'll, what's funny is some of these places I get to go are at nice hotels because the event is at a nice hotel so that people come to it. So like if it's a, it's a big event, they're trying to, and so, but Jenny's like, we're not buying some $100 breakfast. Like, what are you talking about? So she'll bring, like, she has this little, like travel water boiler that always gets pulled. TSA is always like, that is a bomb. Like, it doesn't matter what we do. They're like, I've never heard of people boiling water.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a thing people do. So she always gets pulled and then she brings oatmeal packets. So like, we'll be in maybe the nicest hotel in Laguna and we're eating our own breakfast, like of oatmeal that we brought from home. But that's part of how we like our family, like our family, we always talk about like, be bougie on the things you want to be bougie on. Be like really thrifty on the things you want to be thrifty on. So Jenny loves, like one of her favorite joys is when somebody goes, I love those pants. Where'd you get them? She goes, Walmart. And she loves that because we live in kind of a bougie county and there's a lot of people here that don't go to Walmart. So she loves, she's like, I have this Walmart to myself. And so that's the like, so her traveling with me, we've had a lot of those funny moments where it's like, we're camping inside a hotel in Laguna.
I was going to say camping with the A-cups. This is another book, video series, so reality TV
show. It's just been funny. It's been really, it's been, and then she's starting to go like, she's starting to realize like if you do a one night trip to DFW, I'm not going to go to that one. Like if it's a two night.
Easy. Texas. Come on.
If it's a DFW Marriott, no offense to the Marriott by the airport, it's not the best.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so she's like, you can go on that trip alone. If I'm like, hey, I'm going, you know, for two nights to Palmetto Bluff and, you know, off of Savannah, she's like, I'll go in that one. I'm into that one.
She's got good taste there.
But she's upped my travel game like crazy.
That's great.
That and then like even clothes. She's like, what? Because she hasn't been traveling with me. And so this was like 2 years ago. I came home and usually I change before I fly home because I'm in a suit. And so this time I didn't have time and I came home and she was like, what are you wearing? And I was like, what I always wear. And she's like, those patterns don't match at all. I had a pattern suit with a pattern shirt. Dude, I had been wearing it for like 3 years. Some combination of mismatch. So she was like, that suit is meant for a white shirt only. Oh, I was like, well, I'll be. Like, so like, I would say she's, even 24 years in, I feel like she's just elevating my game. And that's so good. Many, and anybody you talk to in my team would be like, that's true. That's true. And when she gets into situations, she is like, hold on a second. Like last example, she saw, we have a shared calendar because we're so in love. And, and it said, she saw my calendar, it said middle seat alert. So like I had a flight coming up and there was an extra like agenda item or calendar appointment said middle seat alert with an exclamation. And she goes, what have you done to your sweet assistant? She was like, this is because you were grumpy one time in the middle seat. So now she has to alert you. She's like, that's not how we play. She's like, that ain't it. And like, so she's like, so she loves me enough to call me out on stuff that I'm like, oh yeah. That's she's great. Like, don't you do that to Ashley. Like, just sit in the middle seat. Yeah. It's an hour flight. You'll be fine. And she's 100. And so funny thing, like things like that, as she gets more involved in the business have been funny.
It's fun seeing the joy that you guys have of that and the way that you're laughing through it. It's a fun season. I love how you're celebrating it. Mm-hmm. Like, because life is meant to be celebrated. It's a soundtrack.
It should get better. Yeah. Like theoretically, like my 40s were better than my 30s. My 30s were better than my 20s. So my 50s, I'm 49. I can't wait for my 50s. I can't wait. Like, you should learn yourself every year.
Yeah.
Like, I should only be iterating towards better, more joyful, like glory to glory. Like, oh my gosh. Like, if you're leaning into who you're built to be and how you function, then you do a lot less of the stuff that doesn't do well with you and a lot more of the stuff that does. And so, like the grumpy old man thing, like that's only if your life's been a failure. Like I always tell like kids, like teenagers and early 20s, don't listen to any adult who says, don't grow up. Like it's a trap. That's just somebody who sucks at being an adult. Mm. Being an adult is awesome if you do it the right way.
Mm.
Now you can do it the wrong way and be miserable, of course, but man, it's really fun if you figure yourself out, figure your world out and kind of go, these are the five things that keep me kind of in my peak. And I'm going to keep doing these things.
Hmm. So one of the ways that we'd like to finish these episodes is just thinking about a passage of scripture that comes to life. And I think about it in the way that you described a soundtrack. Is there a soundtrack? Maybe it's a song. Maybe it's a worship song. Maybe it's a piece of scripture that you find yourself, man, this is one of the things I go to that's come alive, maybe in this season, or it's just one of those things that you turn to often.
Well, the story I've read the most, the passage of the Bible I've read the most is definitely the prodigal son. Like I've read Luke 15 a billion times and I don't know if I'll ever write a faith book again, but if I do, it'd probably be about that. And I'd probably start it off by saying, I felt like the world needed another book about the prodigal son. Like, I mean, it's pretty well trod. Nobody here in this room was like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like,
never heard that before.
But for me, that's the one that I think, like that's the story I keep coming back to. And I see things in it that are new and different. And like my favorite one, it hit me a couple years ago that the father never talks to the son. The father doesn't say a single word to the son. And most people think he does. But if you go back and read the story, he asks him for money, doesn't say a word. He comes home, says his little kind of spiel, and the father immediately starts talking to the servants. Says, get the fatted calf. Doesn't say a single word to the son. And so what God illuminated for me in that is, all too often when God is quiet in our lives, we assume it's because he's mad, he's ashamed, he's frustrated at us. But what if he had you embraced and he was just too busy planning your party? Like that changes everything. Like once you realize you have a God who fixes problems with parties, because that's not how the rest of life works. There's not a single situation in life where you mess up and you get a party. Like at work, they don't go, hey, you blew that account, so we're going to throw a party. Like you and your wife don't have a fight, like a real fight. Not one of those fake Christian ones where the sun doesn't go down, which by the way, like Jesus is fine with you going to bed and arguing in the morning. Like he's 100%, like you don't get smarter at 3 a.m. You and your spouse don't get better at fixing the fight the later you stay up.
Yeah.
Marriage tip, go, hey, I love you. We're going to pause this. We're going to have coffee and do this in the sunshine tomorrow, like 9 a.m. because it's 3 a.m. We hate each other. So I'll see you in the morning. But like, if you have a big fight with your spouse, they don't go, so I'm going to throw you a party. Like that's never how life works. But in our kingdom, that's how life works. So that's the passage for me that like I come back to again and again.
Amen. Hey, so great to be with you.
Oh yeah.
Thank you for hosting us here in your house.
Yeah, of course.
Great to just see what God's doing this season and grateful for the ways that you're an encouragement to faith-driven entrepreneurs really across the movement to step out faith and take that bold step.
I appreciate that.
It's really, really good. Well, friends, it's always great to be with you. I hope that as you hear today's message, that this isn't just something that causes you some inspiration, a laugh, and a smile. We certainly hope it did that, but we hope it leads to action. So my encouragement to you guys today, I was fascinated just by the conversation, these cards. So check out the book soundtracks, check out those cards to think, where is there a place where you need help kind of starting that conversation? I love what John talked about, is inviting kind of that third party in the room, and these cards can do something like that, whether that's on your journey as a faith-driven entrepreneur in your home or whatever that might look like. And one of the other things that you hear from us often is this idea of entrepreneurship can be a lonely journey, but it doesn't have to be. So as you're wrestling with the soundtracks that are playing in your mind and wondering, what does this look like? You've heard us talk about faith-driven entrepreneur groups, whether they're online or in person. This is a great chance to think our confusion out loud and to journey with people who understand the journey that we are on as faith-driven entrepreneurs. So check out those on the Faith-Driven Entrepreneur website, and we look forward to seeing you guys on next week's episode.
Come for content, stay for community. Join a faith-driven entrepreneur group online or in person. No cost, no catch. Visit faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. That's faithdrivenentrepreneur.org.